seems like only about half an hour ago that I was saying good morning and welcome to the show, but now I'm saying welcome to the final hour of the 9 to Lude show on this Monday morning. And as it's a Monday morning, it means it's time to preview tonight's DL debate. I don't have the pleasure of Brendan Devenny in studio with me this morning, but I do have the next best thing. Brendan joins me on Zoom. Brendan, good morning.
Good morning, Dom.
Brendan, honours shared between Donegal and Galway in O'Donnell Park yesterday. Very much, it seems, it was a game of two halves.
Yeah, Don, I suppose, you know, we can look at it a few ways. The home venue, I think, definitely helped us in the latter stages, I think, when we had to dig deep. But certainly in the first half, when we went five up after Gallen's penalty, it was probably looking as a possible one for us, but unfortunately we conceded a goal a minute later. That's probably where the game swung in terms of us only taking a point out of it. But listen, I thought our defence, which was under pressure in the last few weeks, coped admirably, you know, man for man. They're all getting better as each game goes on, which was a positive to take out of the game. We were quite wasteful in front of the goals, which is unlike us. So Galway was coming with a bit of a reputation, particularly after how they beat Tyrone last week. I know they were missing players though, but all in all, listen, we can look the ways we could have possibly won the game, but in the end, probably the fact that they had a late chance to win it and we survived with a point, it could be vital, you know. Certain teams around us struggling, the more our good neighbours Tyrone as well. So listen, we still have a fighting chance, don't, and I suppose that's all we can hope for.
And I suppose really, 2023 was always going to be a season of transition and a season of change for Donegal. There's a new management team bedding in. There's some new players bedding in. And of course, it's now the first year of the post-Michael Murphy era. It was always going to be tough to get through 2023. And this is the year that we're going to learn perhaps more than we've learned in the past couple of years with regards to Donegal football.
Yeah, Don, yeah, there was a certainly a period of transition coming for us, you know, and I think no matter who took over the team and what was happening, we obviously had the projected management situation, and then, you know, we've had the issues with the academy lately, and there seems to be a lot of, I suppose, almost consternation in the background around what's happening with the team. You know, the Monaghan, second half against Monaghan the other week, left a lot of head scratching. So that's why, you know, people like Mark Curran, McCall, McCaughan, all these lads, you know, not household names, I suppose, in Donegal terms, this last, you know, really stepping up this season and making their mark. And it's at the back. We've had to tighten up, but we did that yesterday. I mean, it was low scoring game, but you'd have to say our defence did their job. It's the other end of the pitch, which we're normally more efficient that we didn't. But certainly it's been a difficult time for Donegal. And we're just looking, I suppose, if we could stay in the division, is a huge thing first, and sort things out, I suppose, with our academy and get on the right foot again, because at the minute, Don, there seem to be a lot of messages out there for a long time with our GA, you know, where things is at and what's happening. It certainly wasn't a good news story. So I think if we could survive in the division, be number one and build into the championship, because most of our team are young in age, so it is like a new team, as you say. It is a transition, so there's always going to be a few stumbling blocks and learning processes in there, but I certainly think there seems to be a good vibe between the lads. And like I spoke to Paddy McBertie after the game, his interview will be in there too, and that's another, as I say, the bad news was coming, and that was part of it. I say Patrick's injury, our captain and our main man inside. So listen, we wish him a speedy recovery too.
Absolutely. Not the best of days for the Donegal ladies. They took the long journey down to Cork, and defeat there for them, and I suppose no more than the men. When we talk about transition, we talk about change. You know, it's a tough time for them at the moment.
Yeah, it is, though, certainly. And there's only one team gets relegated from that division. So, you know, it seems, even though we've lost five in a row, like that, there still is a chance we could technically claw out of it. But yeah, and no more maybe than our men. Maxi, not that there's the same level of interchange, but there was a lot of our star players being rested. He's tried a load of new blood to, I suppose, re-energise the squad a bit. So Donegal will be better come the championship. They'll have a more experienced side out. But for now, certainly finding the going tough in the top flight.
Guests on the DL debate tonight, John Harran, St Union's chairman. You've got Irish news columnist Ciara O'Kane. Also speaking, as you said, to Patrick McPurdy. And also speaking this week to Dr. James McDade, who had something of a singular honour at the weekend.
Yeah, great to catch up with Jimmy. And we had a big, you can probably hear in my voice, Don, it was a bit of a late night. it went on a bit. Listen, you know, as the music gets louder, you're shouting even louder. So I hope the voice comes back for the show tonight. All right. But yeah, great fun out the park. I mean, what a day it was, Don. I mean, we got up yesterday and the sun was shining, and it was one of those really beautiful spring days, and big crowd at the park. And Jimmy's reception, I just looked at a wee video I had on the phone of him coming down, you know, the warmth of applause and that. And, you know, I interviewed him. I said, you know, everything he's done, you know, as a doctor, first of all, there, Kennedy, and a TD, and became a minister, and he helped so many sports clubs around the county in that time. And I think he received some of that warmth back. And, of course, Unions, he had so many roles in Unions over the years. You know, such a man he was about the club. So the warmth of it, as I say, coming down, got a wee bit emotional as he was coming down to cut the ribbon. It was a real nice moment for him, and some huge history there for him. So it was nice for the club to honour him with the naming of the Dr. McDade stand.
And indeed, that's a legacy that will live on. And I'm sure that conversation that's going to be on the programme tonight, Brendan, will be, as you said, it's an emotional one, but also one that's going to be filled with history, because Jim McDade, no doubt, has many, many stories to tell. And I'm sure he's shared several of them with you for this one.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we caught up. It was just after the game. So, listen, he was getting pulled out of the post at that time. And there was a raucous Galway crew in there, actually, Donald, and the crack was great. I obviously, my mum's from Galway, so mm-hmm. there was a lot of crack. There was a good few guys from Tuam and Mount Bellew and that were a big connection. So, listen, it was a brilliant evening. We all headed to Sister Sarah's then, mm-hmm. and the fun continued, as the man says. But it was a great day, and a great crew out supporting Dr. McDade, and well deserved.
Excellent. Well, Sister Sarah is obviously the sponsors of the DL debate, and DL debate live on Highland Radio tonight, just after the 7 o'clock news. It looks like it's going to be a good one. In the meantime, Brendan, thanks very much indeed.
Cheers, Donald.
Thank you, Brendan. That's Brendan Devaney there, the presenter of the DL debate. And as we say, the DL debate will be on just after the news tonight at 7 o'clock. And that'll be live. As we said, the guests will be John Harran, who's the chair of St Eunice, Irish News GAA columnist Ciara O'Kane, also Donegal captain Patrick McBrearty on the programme. And as well as that, we will have that interview with former Donegal TD and Minister Dr. James McDade, after whom the stand in O'Donnell Park was formally named yesterday. Looking at some of the comments coming in, caller says, I keep getting calls from a tax company. I tried to sort rebates with them. I've emailed to cut off services, but they won't stop calling. Any ideas? Now, that is an interesting one, because, I mean, yeah, there are some of these companies who will sort of offer to do this for you, and I suppose they are private commercial companies who are making money, and as soon as you give them your call, you're on their database and they're touting for more business. I don't know. I mean, you know, if there's a, as you say, you've emailed in a bid to cut off the services, I suppose basically maybe block the number if you feel you wish to do that. I can't personally offer any more perspective on it than that. Now, we spoke earlier on about the fact that there are roadworks on the Forelane, and the Forelane is that road that connects basically the Dry Arch and Polestar roundabouts on the outskirts of Letterkenny. Now, Kevin is on line one, and Kevin wants to raise an issue with regards to the area around the Dry Arch itself. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Donald. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Kevin, the Dry Arch, we have on the one side of the road, we have a very busy petrol station shop, we have a bar, and we have a number of services going down the side of the road there at Bonagee. On the other side of the road, we have a very big hotel. There's a very often a constant stream of people trying to get from one side of the road to the other. It's a four-lane road, it's a busy road, pedestrians are taking their lives into their hands.
Yeah, and the initial, as I thought at the beginning of all this, that there would be no breaks in the central barrier, that everything was going to be divided, this concrete barrier. So my thought on it would be why not put a pedestrian footbridge over that at that particular point, which would be the safest thing. Health and safety, as you know, that would be the safest thing for pedestrians going from one side to the other.
Have you raised this issue with any of the councillors or with Donegal County? It does certainly seem to be a good idea. Certainly, you'd see bridges like that around Dublin. I will often stay at a hotel close to the Red Cow roundabout, and there's one of those pedestrian bridges. If you go walking in the morning, there's a bridge that goes over what is effectively the end of the Naistrule carriageway, as we call it, heading for the M50. And it's it's a very effective bridge. It would seem that Donegal doesn't have the capacity to have such a bridge here.
I don't think we have joined up thinking here in Donegal, because, as you probably be well aware, the whole mishmash of roads and their crossings and things like that. But this would be something that would be health and safety. It would be really something to think about and do. And I didn't think about this until I was listening to the programme on, was it Thursday or Friday? It was on with Greg, and I just rang Caroline in with that. Now, bearing in mind one thing, that if you go further out the dual carriageway, there is an underpass for cattle to cross from one field to the other.
Yep.
Right? Now, if we can do that for the cattle, surely we can do a safe and productive a safety thing for pedestrians to cross from one side of the road to the other, especially a dual carriageway. Like, I mean, dual carriageway and its name, there should be no crossings on it unless they're done by either roundabouts or traffic lights. And, you know, it's very simple.
Yeah.
We're spending a fortune on things that, on that road, that probably, when they look about it, could have done without that, but we couldn't do, we can't do without this overpass. Yeah. You know?
And as you said, maybe it's slightly ironic, but one of the big things they're doing actually is putting much improved footpaths on both sides of that road.
Yes.
And in fairness, and it's a good thing, and I'd have to say, as someone who would do a bit of walking, I absolutely welcome that, because it's not been the easiest place to walk on up to now. So we're going to have good footpaths, it seems, on both sides of the road. That's a tick mark. But as you say, particularly, and I mean, you know, when people want to cross from the hotel over to the shop, I mean, even that in itself is going to generate quite a lot of people crossing the road. And certainly if there's a function on in Bonagie, if there's a match on in Bonagie and someone wants to nip over to the hotel or whatever, you know, you certainly do have demand for a crossing there. Now, I suppose what Donegal County Council are going to tell you is that road isn't under their control. That road is under the control of TII, Transport Infrastructure Ireland. So, you know, it's kind of out of the council's purview to a certain extent to actually get that done. But maybe if the council and the TII had an old chat, they might get something sorted.
Well, look, there's going to be an odd councillor listening to this discussion now at the moment, Donal, and that they'll come on board and say, well, look, it's a good day. I'm not looking for anything pat in the back for bringing it up, but you go anywhere and you see dual carriageway, you see footbridges, right?
Uh-huh.
Going over dual carriageways and motorways, you know, it's kind of one of them ones that somebody should have been built in. As I say, the central island was supposed to be not broken. This concrete barrier, what the whole work is all about, so that it'll be a safe section of road. And then we're expecting pedestrians to take their life in their hands going across the road.
Yeah, and particularly given traffic that's coming down from, say, Lurgy Brack, from the direction of Donegal Town, Ballybofey, Stranorra, and so on, you know.
Yeah.
Traffic coming down that way, you come down Lurgy Brack, you're turning left and you're pretty much on top of the hotel immediately. And, you know, if someone is crossing there, it's going to be very late before anyone coming down from Lurgy Brack direction is going to be able to see them.
Well, we see what happens to at the roundabouts where there's crossing so close to them. The roundabouts and around the towns get clogged up, you know.
Yeah.
And it comes to, what is it? Somebody says it's a total gridlock. for the period of time until the passengers are across the road.
Yeah.
After knocking all the work that was done, that bit of work that was done up around the schools, the one-way system around there, pat in the back to them, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I live not far away from it. I do think that is working. I really personally do think that is working. And I know there was a number of people who were sceptical about it at the time, but it does. We've had a note in from a caller that says planning permission was applied for an overpass for pedestrians 20 to 25 years ago, but it was rejected back then.
Look, 25 years ago, hopefully we've moved on our thought process. Like,
well, not only has our thought process moved on, I think over the past 25 years, the level of traffic in Letterkenny has moved on considerably as well. I mean, there's a hell of a lot more traffic on that road than there was 20 years ago.
Definitely so, because, I've done some work on that road. We've been out in the manholes on that road.
Yeah.
And the difference in the traffic level is unbelievable. Yeah. Look, see. But, no, I think it's something that's worth taking on board. And if there's anybody listening that can do something about it, I think that's the way to go forward.
Kevin, point well made, and thanks indeed for making it. You take care. And remember, if you want to react to that or any other issue that's on the programme, you can text us or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. Call us on 07491 25000, 00353 7491 25000 if you're outside of the dialing area. We're at Highland Radio on Twitter, we're Highland Hub on Facebook, and we're also on Instagram and all other manners of social media. Don't forget, by the way, please do keep sending us in your pictures of the Aurora Borealis, the Northern Lights. We got some great shots last night, and as David Moore said to us, there could be opportunities to see the lights again tonight. Astronomyireland.ie is their website, and if you subscribe to their social media, you'll hopefully get the forward nod in advance as to when the best time would be to see them. Get yourself in an area where you can see the northern horizon and you're not too affected by light pollution in the way, and you could get to see one hell of a show. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Caller says, Donal, I was listening to Paul and Jimmy last week and really enjoyed the Horselips tribute band. I know you're going to be with them in Ballybuffet. I'm jealous. Yes, indeed. Thank you, caller. I will indeed be in Ballybuffet at the Banner Theatre on Friday night. Swords of Light, the new Horselips tribute band, as endorsed by, among others, Barry Devlin and Jim Lockhart at the Horselips convention in Belfast in November of last year. So they're playing the Banner on Friday night, and it is going to be one hell of a gig. We were speaking earlier about services outside of the acute hospital. Caller says, my son got a chest x-ray in Carndonagh Hospital last year. He was 3 at the time. There are many HSC and HSC-funded services out there, but very often the GPs aren't aware of referral pathways or are reluctant to refer to community services such as mental health or social prescription, HSC, ecotherapy, day service, wellness cafes, family centres. There should be a greater emphasis as well on social or green prescriptions. And I think anything that improves people's health is to be looked at and, and utilised as best as possible. Another caller says, we have a brand new HSC centre in Buncrana, and indeed I've seen it, and it is an excellent centre. We've heard it was for x-rays, but so far it's just a doctor's surgery. Now, hopefully what will be done is that we will, in the course of time, see these new centres reach their full capacity. There's equipment issues, there's staffing issues, there's radiographers to be brought in, and so on and so forth. So as we said, it isn't just a matter of sticking a machine into a room and starting doing your x-rays tomorrow. You have to make sure you have your staff and your support services in place, and very often that can be the sticking point. But hopefully we're moving forward. Let's put a few comments to one side and go to Zoom, because we are going to take a little trip through the Barnesmore Gap down to the Abbey Vocational School in Donegal Town, where we're joined by Rowan Buchanan, Claudette Lacken and Freya Burton. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well indeed. Can I just ask, just so that people aren't confused, which is Rowan, which is Claudette, which is Freya?
So I'm Rowan.
Yeah.
I'm Freya. And I'm Claudette.
Right, and it's great to have you on the programme this morning. The reason you're with us is you've been involved in YSI, which, as I recall, is Young Social Innovators. And it's a project called The Greenest Link, looking at public transport in Donegal. Tell us about the project.
So basically, YSI is obviously a national competition that our school takes part in every year. And so this year, our first goal was to pick a project, and we were talking amongst ourselves and sort of putting it towards the group. And we came to the idea that we wanted to work with something in the community, specifically with the global goals and sustainability. And we realized that the local link in the transport wasn't maybe as good as it should be. So we came to that idea that we wanted just to fix some minor issues in it for our community.
Is the problem with the service? Is the problem with the vehicles? Is the problem with the timetable? Is the problem with the community? Where are the problems that you identified?
Well, we did a survey, and actually we find that in the school among students, people find it very hard to find and read the timetables, find and get to the stops where the local link arrives, and also that the local link is usually maybe late or they don't show up.
Freya, from your own point of view, obviously that community interaction was really important.
Sorry?
I said from your own point of view, that level of reaching out to the community and actually getting the community's views and speaking to people was very important as part of the project. It isn't just your opinions, it's actually what people are telling you when you communicate with them.
Yeah, definitely.
So where to then? Once you'd spoken to people, you'd got your findings together, what was the next step? Clodagh?
So our next step was to come up with our plan about how we would take our project to the next level. So last week we were speaking with the YSI Den, and we received €500 funding to help with our project. So one of the things that we would love to do is to print off leaflets with the timetables of the local link so that we can pass them around to members of our community, such as the elderly, to make the timetables more accessible. And we also have an idea to improve the local link app. They already have it in place, and we hope to add a GPS tracking feature so that we can see if the buses are running late or if they're en route, so that we can plan our journey ahead and allow for any delays. So this would be a huge benefit for everyone when they could see it on their phone.
And do you believe that if people have a clearer idea of the timetables, if people have better access to the timetables, then more people will use the bus? Because it seems to me a lot of people that could be using it aren't using it because they don't know it's going to be there.
Yeah, you're definitely right on that. I think whenever we make more awareness about the local link and we make sure that we do everything we can to make it more reliable, then more people would use the buses, which would be great for our environment too, as it's better to everyone be in one bus than everybody in individual cars.
Yeah. Frey, you've also been reaching out to the local primary schools and trying to get those involved.
Yeah, we're running a poster competition for the primary school kids just to get them more involved in our project and just to educate them a bit more on the importance of sustainable transport. And we plan on just... once the poster competition is over, we want to put these posters just around shops in our local community.
And going back to yourself, Rowan, in terms of what you've achieved so far, I mean, is this making a difference, do you believe?
Well, we believe that this project is more than just for the YSI. We hope that if we can get this change, then it will benefit the community in the future after this competition is over. And that is our overall goal, to make sure that there is a working local transport system.
Now, what YSI is, as I recall, a competition, Young Social Innovators, and you will be going, I presume, shortly to Dublin to actually present your project and your findings at the national finals?
Yes, well, we have the speak out before that. So the speak out is on the 30th of March, and that's in Sligo. And that's basically where each team has about 2 minutes to present their project. And then if we get through, then after that, yes, we'll be presenting in Dublin.
And obviously, you're going to be going and saying, look, we didn't just have an idea. We actually went into the community and we spoke to people. And Clodagh, that's going to be important when you're presenting, because you're not just saying, this is our idea. What you're saying is, this is the community's idea. This is coming from the people.
Exactly. You're completely right. The more people that we have behind us supporting our idea, the more successful that will be.
What's the scope of the project? I mean, How far are you reaching? Is it just Donegal Town and its immediate environs, or is this a model you believe can go further?
Well, at the moment, we're just trying to get the surrounding areas in Donegal Town, so Killybegs, Dunkineely, Brookless, Frosses, etc. But hopefully, if that works, and if other parts of Donegal are the same, they have similar problems, then TFI, which we're hoping to work with, we're waiting for them to get back to us currently at the moment. But hopefully we'll be able to work with them then to make it across the whole county.
And in terms of Local Link and working with them, I'm sure you're finding a very receptive ear in Local Link's management because they want to improve their service as much as they can.
Yes, they've been a great help. We are, again, waiting for their response. We have gotten back in touch with them. But in the meantime, we're getting on with our poster competition and the workshop that we're hoping to hold.
Rowan Buchanan, Claudia Lacken and Freya Burton, all three of you, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. And we wish you all the best at the Speak Out in Sligo. And if things go further, we wish you all the best in Dublin as well. And most importantly, we wish you all the best with the project. And hopefully when you're in a few years' time walking down the road and you see the Local Link bus pass on time, you can think to yourself, I helped make that happen.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
In the meantime, thank you very much indeed. It's been a pleasure, guys. Take care. Bye-bye now. And that is the Local Link project in Donegal Town, part of YSI, the Greenest Link. And that was Rowan, Clodagh and Freya there speaking to us from the Abbey Vocational School. And it's great to see a project like that that's going to hopefully make a very real and tangible difference in their community. Now, a caller has just asked, have you heard anything about roadworks in Ballybuffet, Stranorr? They're meant to be outside, potentially outside the chapel, or perhaps work on water mains. I don't want this to be like the crossings where things just happened very suddenly. I don't know is the answer to the question. So what I would suggest is maybe contact, if you want to contact the council, they should know. But in the meantime, if anyone out there does actually know, are there works planned for Ballybuffet Stranorr? I mean, I know in fairness, Ballybuffet Stranorr got torn up again and again and again. And that area suffered more roadworks over the past 4 or 5 years than any area, really should. So, hopefully there's not going to be too much disruption there. If you know what the situation is, give us a shout. There's some potentially very important discussions taking place on the protocol. More on that after these. Ursula von der Leyen is meeting with Rishi Sunak potentially today to discuss the Northern Ireland Protocol and a potential breakthrough deal. However, there are a number of outstanding questions. The two main questions being, number one, will the Eurosceptics in Rishi Sunak's own party accept it? And perhaps for ourselves in the northwest of Ireland, an even more crucial question, will the DUP accept it? We're joined on the line by a good friend of this programme, Labour MP Pat McFadden. Pat, good morning.
Good morning.
Pat, you're obviously watching this very closely, what's been happening over the past number of days. The mood music all seems to be correct. The choreography seems to be in place. Everything is looking like there's going to be big movement today. Do you believe that's going to happen?
It looks that way. And if Ursula von der Leyen is meeting Rishi Sunak, everyone is assuming that that's to sign something off that's already really been negotiated and completed. It's not likely that they would meet and not come to a deal. And I think it would be a good thing if it did happen, because the protocol, in the way that it's been operating, has caused significant problems certainly between Northern Ireland and GB. But it's not. This deal is not just about how the protocol has been operating. I think it will have wider significance because it will show a different way of doing business between the UK and the European Union. We've had several years of quite harsh rhetoric. We had a Northern Ireland Protocol Bill, which was going to see the UK government unilaterally opt out of a deal that they'd reached. And all of that was going to cause considerable bad feeling, even if it had been possible, to go down a different track and try to resolve problems by agreement and therefore to build goodwill is a much better approach. And that's why if Rishi Sunak does reach an agreement today, the problems he'll have in Parliament won't be with the Labour Party, who are overwhelmingly likely to support this deal. If he has any problems, is likely to be on his own backbenchers, and as you said, possibly with the DUP.
And that's what makes this a very unique situation, because, I mean, his problem really for the past while hasn't been Labour. Keir Starmer has made it quite clear that he will be supportive of a deal. We're hearing certainly from the Stormont parties, the non-DUP Stormont parties, they're receptive to the idea of a deal. Now, it then comes down to the DUP, because Rishi Sunak did make it quite clear last week that if the DUP doesn't accept the deal, he won't accept the deal. So can we take it that there are back channels open between the DUP, Rishi Sunak and his people, and that those discussions and negotiations are taking place between Rishi Sunak and Geoffrey Donaldson and his colleagues? Or is this going to be Sunak accepting and then going to the DUP and saying, what do you think? Because one would presume it'll be the former.
You would presume it would be the former. But, I can't speak for the DUP or what their response might be. All I can say is he won't have a problem on the Labour side. We want to have an adult, positive relationship between the United Kingdom and the European Union. We're not proposing to rerun the Brexit argument, because I think everyone in the UK has been exhausted by it. We do want to get the relationship in a better place than it's been in recent years. And the way to do that is, when there's a difficulty, to try to reach agreement on that through negotiation, rather than simply saying you're going to take unilateral action and everybody's going to go to court and all the rest of it. Because we need goodwill. And the other reason that we need goodwill is, you know, events elsewhere in Europe, like Russia's invasion of Ukraine, has put into perspective some of the things that the UK and the EU have been disagreeing about. I think people have realised through those awful events that we've got far more in common as fellow democracies than some of the things we've been arguing about in recent years, when you look at what's happening there.
A lot of the talk, obviously, has been about trade, but it would appear that one of the main stumbling blocks is the issue of European law and whether the European Court of Justice will have any jurisdiction in Northern Ireland, and what the relationship between the European Court of Justice and Northern Ireland would be. And that's one element of this whole debate that in the general conversation tends to be overlooked. How big an issue is that in your view?
It is a very big issue for some of the people on Rishi Sunak's backbenches. Now, I've not seen the details of this deal, but I would expect that, given that for trading goods, Northern Ireland is effectively part of the single market rule book, that ultimately there will be a role for the ECJ in policing that. That is, they are the court that makes rulings on single market rules. So that's something that Rishi Sunak will have to sell to his backbenchers. Now, it may be that they have steps before that involving courts in Northern Ireland that might make the ECJ more of a, if you like, a distant prospect. But I would expect it to be there somewhere in the background. In reality, it would probably be in very limited cases that something gets that far. So I don't think it will be a big problem in a day-to-day sense. But for some of the people who've got very deep-seated feelings about sovereignty and who should decide what rules, it is a big issue. And he might find that when he's trying to sell this deal.
Effectively, what you're saying is it's going to be an issue of principle rather than an issue of practice.
I think so. In practice, I suspect that the ECJ is not going to be camped in Northern Ireland making rulings on this, that, and the next thing every day. But there are some politicians in Parliament for whom any role in any circumstances, no matter how rare, is simply unacceptable. Now, my sense is that Rishi Sunak has said to his party, look, the greater prize here is to get this resolved by negotiation, and this is something you're going to have to accept. And my sense is also that even for some of the traditional Brexiteers, that he'll manage to do that. So it's difficult to know in advance of publication, but it feels like any rebellion on the government side will be containable for him. You know, we'll see if that turns out. But as of this moment, it does feel like that.
The next question, obviously, on this side of the Irish Sea is, what happens at Stormont. If the DUP accepts the deal, then the barrier to the DUP re-entering an executive is theoretically removed, and we can see a situation where Stormont convenes, an executive is voted in, and we see a government formed at Stormont with Michelle O'Neill as First Minister and a DUP Deputy First Minister, be it Paul Given or whoever it may happen to be. Obviously, Geoffrey Donaldson will be at Westminster, so it won't be him. One suggestion that's been made is that effectively the DUP will move hell and high water not to be in government with a Sinn Féin First Minister. And that in itself is one of the stumbling blocks, that the DUP simply does not want to be in a Sinn Féin-led government, even though politically the First and Deputy First Ministers are of equal status, give or take. So from that point of view, is that going to be an issue, or do you believe the DUP can overcome that and actually go into a Michelle O'Neill-led executive?
It's harder for me to speak with any certainty on that. The only thing I would say is, you know, we want the institutions to be up and running. These were the, you know, we're approaching the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. These were the institutions. That system that you've just described was at the heart of the agreement. And the heart of the agreement was Northern Ireland would have a devolved bodies to make decisions on those things that should be decided there. And the longer the institutions are in abeyance, that's not happening. Big decisions aren't being taken. You've got this sort of holding pattern of civil servants having to make decisions without proper ministerial involvement. So, you know, I think it's in the interest of the people of Northern Ireland to have proper government there. And that's, you know, that's what's supposed to happen. So I hope that if there's an agreement, it paves the way for that to happen. But I'd be less sure about making predictions on that than I have on other parts of what we talked
Absolutely,
about.
Absolutely, yeah. And certainly there are issues, certainly on this side, where we're seeing weekly statements from various political parties saying, we want to implement X, but we can't because there isn't a minister at Stormont to sign off on it. And even there's a very important strategic rail review which is awaiting publication. And at this point in time, it hasn't been published. And one of the reasons it hasn't been published is we don't have a transport minister to sign off on it. So certainly there are practical issues that maybe Rishi Sunak and his supporters and people, you know, in England, Wales and Scotland aren't seeing, which are very real on the ground in Northern Ireland and impacting on the border counties as well, where you actually have situations where things can't move on and things can't happen. We saw, for instance, electricity benefits and subsidies that were passed on across the rest of the UK are only being rolled out in Northern Ireland now because they didn't have an actual mechanism to get them paid. So, you know, even something as key and important as that in the current financial circumstances, you know, that was delayed. So
And the longer it goes on, probably the more examples you could rack up. There are certain things you can do administratively, but it's better to have elected politicians to whom the civil servants can give advice, get authority, get decisions, get direction. That's what democratic government's supposed to be about. And it's been in abeyance for too long. But, you know, nobody can force these things. And it takes the parties to want to participate. I hope that's an outcome of today if we get the result that we're expecting. But, you know, it's difficult to predict.
Well, we'll see what unfolds in the coming hours. In the meantime, Pat McFadden, Labour MP, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, and good morning to all your listeners. Thanks very much.
Thank you indeed, Pat. Pleasure as always. That's Pat McFadden there, Labour MP. As I say, a long-standing friend of this programme. Just looking at some comments with regards to that crossing close to the Bank of Ireland there in Ballybofey. Caller says, I think the crossing is a good job. The traffic stops for you. I was in yesterday. It saved me walking down the town. Absolutely. The location is not the issue. And I think in fairness, our earlier callers did say that. The location isn't the issue. The issue a lot of people have with that crossing in Ballybofey is the fact that it's not signposted and it's not lit, and the specific issue was at night. Certainly by day, if there's a clear view of what's happening, it's a very good crossing indeed. And I think the feeling too is that sort of the Twin Towns were used as a almost, you know, as part of an experiment where in one area they did put up the signs and the other area they didn't put up the signs, and the Twin Towns was the area that got the short straw and didn't get the signs. So, you know, it's hopefully all going to be resolved over the course of the coming months. Right, this is the 9 till noon show. Now, there was announcements about aquaculture at the weekend, and some announcements for Donegal, but a caller not happy saying farmed oysters are not environmentally friendly. They destroy beaches and the native fish flora and fauna. You are giving credence to on board the Ishikawara in a bid to give farmed oysters a good name. Go back to all the opposition to the oyster farms in Donegal coastal communities in recent years to see the spin that BIM are putting on the situation. Also, oysters are flown to China and Singapore. Do they count this into their carbon emission projections? So asks a caller. And we just got the INMO's trolley watch figures in. Letterkenny University Hospital this morning, 27 people awaiting beds, 16 of them on emergency department trolleys. That's the figure from Letterkenny. Nationally, the total 575 awaiting beds, and of those, 449 on emergency department trolleys. Now, I want to go to Barry Murphy of Bodywise, and thank you, Barry, for your forbearance. I know you've been in that waiting room on Zoom for a while. Bodywise, looking in particular at the issue, Barry, of men and boys with eating disorders. It's an issue we've discussed before, but it's an issue you believe needs to be discussed more.
Yeah, certainly. I think men's experience of eating disorders have often been overlooked, both, I think, by the field of eating disorders and kind of the public's awareness of same. So they would say potentially one in four eating disorders are affecting men and boys in particular. And for that group, you know, there is that heightened stigma around what's been historically framed or called, quote, kind of a female illness. And it very much is something I think families as well kind of sometimes struggle to get their head around, that a boy or a man can experience an eating disorder too.
One in four, that's 25%. I mean, I must be honest and say I would have not expected as large a figure as that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a common question, I suppose, from journalists, you know, why men? And then second, you know, why the increases in men? And I suppose it's a couple of things happening in parallel, I think, in my opinion. So we know from the Australian experience that risky behaviours around food, weight and exercise have been on the increase in men for a couple of decades. And that's by no means unique to Australia. We know from research carried out from the University of Galway, there was a statistically significant increase in young people trying to diet or lose weight, and particularly boys in the 15 to 17 range. And so that's a risk factor. We know that I think boys and men's bodies are kind of more objectified than they have been in the past. And then also we know sometimes there's a big piece around steroids. It's not necessarily something we see directly in our work, but I think it is there again from the Australian experience. And then there's a piece around this idea of protein, and this is something you should pay attention to and scrutinize. And so kind of out of all of that, I think that's sometimes why boys and men fall down the dark path of an eating disorder.
Is it linked then potentially to gyms and places like that? Because certainly anyone that frequents gyms will notice more and more you're going to see the big tubs of whey powder and other supplements and so on and so forth. And it seems in recent years that's grown quite a lot, and it's being presented as something that's desirable, something that's necessary to build, as you say, to build up the muscles and build up the protein. And maybe it's setting people down a path that's not necessarily right for them.
Yeah, I mean, we live, I suppose, both in an information blizzard, and at the same time, there's a lot of misinformation from sometimes as well people who aren't necessarily qualified in this area, and there can be sometimes quite a simplistic kind of before and after picture presented. And in a sense, it can be like the body is a means of production. That is, this is something you should be kind of constantly working towards changing. And I think for male athletes in particular, they can be the hardest to reach when they're experiencing an eating disorder, because they may not kind of want to get help.
Do the disorders present themselves differently in men and women? Very often in women, we're talking about, say, anorexia nervosa. Is the experience of men different, or is it similar expressions of the disorder, similar ways in which it affects them?
There would be some similarities and then some differences. So I suppose, you know, historically, that we know more about women's experiences, and a lot of the diagnostic tools out there have been based on women's experiences. And that's kind of been one of the criticisms, that kind of the field of eating disorders hasn't really been set up effectively to capture men's experiences. So we know there's a piece around this idea of muscle dysmorphia, and that's, you know, sometimes alluded to as kind of reverse anorexia nervosa, where a person gets locked into this kind of cycle of constantly building muscle mass. And the difficulty there is it's never enough, in the same way with anorexia nervosa, weight loss. It's never enough. It's this constant push. And for men, I suppose that there can be a lot too around kind of compulsive exercise and the frequency of training. And a red flag there is, you know, a person not being able to take a day off, in a sense, or they really push through injury and don't take that kind of rest recovery period, and then that all affects their quality of life.
A caller has contacted us to say, my son is really into working out at the moment. He's living off chicken and broccoli. I'm very worried about him. Am I being overbearing? Am I being over anxious?
Yes, so it's kind of, I suppose, it could be a couple of things. Is it that the person is pursuing this maybe out of some sort of kind of specific diet that they have in mind? You know, what's the impact here, say, on school, college, work, quality of life? Have you noticed any sort of personality change? That can very much come through as well. Are they having difficulties with flexibility? So if you kind of change the family meal plan kind of at the last minute, does that really throw them off in some way? So those would be kind of a couple of red flags. So is it that focus you've described, might it be masking something else? Is a question maybe I would be asking.
Obviously, Barry, if people do want to get in touch with you, be they people who think they may themselves have a disorder or people that have queries like our caller just there, they can make contact with you at BodyWhys. That's at BodyWhys. How can they do so?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've Eating Disorders Awareness Week just kicked off this morning. So that's all up online, various webinars and across our social media. We'll have a couple of podcasts and a new animation focusing on a sibling perspective. Or people can also contact 01-210-7906 or message alex@bodywhys.ie for support. And then our family program pillar, which is coming up as well online on the 9th of March.
Barry Murphy, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. Barry there from BodyWhys. Just repeat that web address. It's www.bodywhys, that's BodyWhys.ie. And you'll find a wealth of information there, and hopefully some perspective and some answers. In the meantime, Barry, thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's Barry there from BodyWhys, and that brings today's 9 till noon show to a close. Thank you indeed to Donna Marie for producing, and also thanks to Anya for all her help on the programme as well. And John Breslin is up next on the 9 till noon show. Not on the 9 till noon show. John's up next on Around the Northwest. Most importantly, thanks to you for listening. Thanks to all our contributors, and thanks to you for your contributions. Until the noon show, back on the air tomorrow morning at 9. But for myself, Donald Kavanagh, have a very good day.